Welcome to the College Admissions Process Podcast presented by Prep Expert. Prep Expert offers live online SAT and ACT courses with the best score guarantees, instructors, and curriculum. Go to prepexpert.com to guarantee your child's success. Welcome to The Cap, where we are here to speak with college reps and other professionals in the field of college admissions to help answer all your questions and guide you through every step of the process. So if you're serious about college admissions, you've come to the right place. Are you ready? Let's talk about it. And now, here's your host, Dr. John Durante. Welcome to The Cap, the College Admissions Process Podcast. I am your host, John Durante, and it gives me great pleasure to welcome back Kelly Kaufman, who's now the Associate Director of Marketing and Communications at the University of Georgia. Kelly, thank you so much for coming back on the podcast. How are you?
Doing great, John. Thanks so much for having me on this morning. Looking forward to talking with you a little bit more about the University of Georgia and some things that have changed since we last touched base in 2022.
Well, I'm looking forward to that conversation, and I already know that one of the things that's changed for those of us who live up in the Northeast, that you're definitely getting far more applications, you know, from people from our area here. So looking forward to diving deep into this, Kelly. So thank you for recording, by the way, episode 27 with us. Now, that was back on May 2nd of 2022. So again, Kelly, can you share what's new on campus since our last conversation?
Sure, absolutely. So it is kind of crazy to think that I was number 27 and now you're at 200 podcasts. So kudos to providing this wonderful information to students and families in your area. But, you know, since we last connected, I would really emphasize that at the University of Georgia, as you mentioned, we have seen a growing number of applications from your area, but also from out of state overall. And so in fall of 2022, we were really inching towards seeing most of our applications, about 65% of our applications, coming from students who were not Georgia residents or not students within Georgia. And so seeing that shift, we have adjusted a few things in our process, and one of those being a priority to enroll a first-year class that is comprised of 80% Georgia residents and 20% non-Georgia residents. And I really want to emphasize that this comes down to our goal for enrollment. This is not admit rate by any means, because the reality is we have to admit a little bit more out of state sometimes to get that 20%, just on a number of factors from, you know, distance, tuition, costs, all those good things. But our goal, as being a flagship institution, is to start with serving 80% Georgia residents and 20% non-Georgia residents. So I think that's a really impactful thing for students from your area to know as we're moving forward with future cycles.
Well, I really appreciate you talking about the institutional priority. Number one, you talked about the fact that in the fall of 2022, you were getting approximately 65% of your students from out of state. Now, the institutional priority has shifted. 80% of your students are Georgia residents, while 20% are not. Now, when we talk about the 20% that are out of state, I would imagine that that also includes international students, correct, Kelly?
Correct. Yes, that would include students who are not Georgia residents that would fall into that category.
Perfect. And I mention this because a lot of times students, they apply, they want the University of Georgia, they are an out-of-stater, they did everything right. They have a beautiful essay, they worked really hard on their transcripts and activity sheets over 4 years of high school to present themselves in the best light that they can, to find out that they're waitlisted or perhaps they're denied. Sometimes it's because of the fact that the institutional priority is that they're only accepting 20% from out of state. And so that makes the overall process a little bit more complicated. So Kelly, anything else that you want to share with that?
No, I think that's perfect. But just to emphasize that 20% is not admitted, but it will be 20% enrolled. Mm-hmm. And so depending upon the geographic makeup of our applicant pool from year to year, it could be more difficult to get admitted as an out-of-state student. But again, it just depends on who is applying year over year. And that's something that none of us essentially can predict.
Understood. And speaking of freshmen, what's your institutional priority in terms of the number of freshmen you are looking to admit each year as an incoming class? And how many overall applications do you receive to fulfill that number?
That's a really great question. So at this point in time, our goal for a first year class is going to be right around 6,200 students. I mentioned we've seen an increase in applications over the past number of years. And just to kind of give you some insight into data, you know, in 2022, we were just shy of 40,000 applications. 2023, we saw about 43,000, and last year, 43,000 as well. To get 6,200 students, it depends on a number of different factors throughout the process. So when we're building that class, the number of students that we're accepting could end up changing from year to year. But just to give you a little insight, last year in receiving 43,000 applications, we admitted right around 15,900 applicants to then achieve our class of about 6,200 first-year students.
Well, we appreciate that. Again, the institutional priority number one is always class size of that incoming freshman class. You're looking at about 6,200 students for your freshman class while receiving 43,000 applications. And I appreciate how you talked about the last cycle, where out of the 43,000, you admitted approximately 15,900 to ultimately come up with that incoming class of 6,200. So that's great insight. Really appreciate it. And it's important because, again, when students are applying, if in fact they get on the wait list, it's not necessarily that you did something wrong. It just might be because of those institutional priorities, Kelly, that you explained so well. I read that your retention rate, by the way, Kelly, which represents the percentage of freshmen that return after that first year, is an astonishing 95%, which is well above that national average at approximately 70%. So what is it about your community at Georgia and academic and extracurricular offerings that makes students want to return each year?
That's a great question. So I would say that first and foremost, UGA is very intentional about using data to inform student success. So when you look at that first year retention rate, that essentially means that we are meeting our students' wants and needs in a quick way to summarize it. They're having a good experience, a positive experience, and they're returning to campus for their second year. So when you look at ways that we are, say, achieving this really strong retention rate, I'd look at it from maybe two different lenses. So number one, there's going to be an academic piece to that, but then also holistically and proactively. But to kick it off with academically, some things that we have launched to help achieve this number and continue to improving it would be elevating instruction for student engagement through classroom renovations, faculty training, and additional student programming. The university has increased academic advisors to give students more academic guidance and support throughout their undergraduate experience. We've also expanded tutoring, mentorship, and peer learning opportunities. So, for example, our Office of Student Success and Achievement here on campus, they offer over 300 undergraduate courses for tutoring plus writing. And so that's been a really great way to help support students from that academic side. But then in terms of that holistic and proactive approach, we're really big on building community. And I think that's really a good lifelong lesson, is that, you know, when you have something that grounds you and keeps you connected and engaged, there's more buy-in from you and really everybody involved. And so in terms of that, ways that we're building community, we have a campus-wide initiative to celebrate incoming and returning students, which is called Welcome to UGA. There's also a comprehensive well-being initiative that provides students clinical, non-clinical resources for that mental health and well-being. How do you take care of yourself? That's a big conversation that I know we have here on campus, and I'm sure that you all have with your students as well. But also the Department of Student Transitions within Student Affairs has a lot of programming and just opportunities to inform students of campus resources and connect them with peers and faculty. I'd say that that's probably a good overview of how we're helping achieve and hopefully improve that retention rate of 95%.
Well, I love how you talk about the fact that you're intentional at UGA in using data to assess students' wants and needs. You explained everything that you've been doing academically and socially, which helps foster that amazing community with a 95% retention rate. So it's a testament to the great work that you do in admissions to get the right students on your campus, but also the work that the University of Georgia does to make sure that the students are happy, again, academically and socially while on campus, wanting to return year after year. So let's talk a little bit about the application review process. Kelly, could you explain UGA's holistic review and what specific attributes or experience the admissions team looks for when reviewing those applications?
I'm glad that you brought up the question about holistic admissions. And one kind of thing I really want to lay the foundation for is that in holistic admissions, this does not mean that we are only looking at specific things like non-academic factors. So think about holistic admissions kind of like when you're following a recipe in the kitchen, say you're making cookies, that there are a whole bunch of ingredients and serving sizes that go into achieving that perfectly baked chocolate chip cookie. And so we're not isolating specific items or giving more, I would say, importance to any ingredient. You really need all of them to achieve the desired outcome. So when you think about holistic, what this means is that while we are looking at academic factors, we are also looking at non-academic factors. So in our holistic review process, we're going to look at how a student has demonstrated their academic achievement in their core academic courses over 4 years, what grades they've earned. We're also going to look at how the student has challenged themselves in those core academic areas relative to what the school offers. Because one big thing here we understand is that each school has different offerings. So that plays a big part in how we're reviewing applications. But then also, has the student demonstrated maturity, work ethic? Have they overcome any serious obstacles? Beyond academics, that's where that co-curricular part is coming into play. So when we're looking for students to be a member of this community, we're essentially looking to see how have you contributed to your community and how would that translate here. So we're looking for students who have given back. One of the key things to remember here is that we're looking for commitment over time and depth. So when you see a student who's been involved in a few things, but has done it over 4 years or sometimes even longer than that, and they've grown in those activities, it really speaks a lot versus someone who has just done activities and activities for 1 or 2 years along the way. We're also looking for students who have expressed individualism, creativity. This could be through their essays, writings, activities, but then also students who appreciate those around them with differences. You know, when you're building a college community, you're essentially bringing people with varying backgrounds, experiences, and the goal is to have not only you learn academically in the classroom, but learn socially from people with different beliefs to make you a better citizen when you leave here too. So,
well, we appreciate that. I love how you talk about that. You're not isolating any one part of the overall application. You're looking at academics, but you're also looking at non-academic factors such as the transcript to see what was available to you, what did you take advantage of, how did you perform, so that you could determine whether or not a student who comes to your campus, first of all, could handle the work. But you're also looking to build upon that amazing community that you have. So you do look at the extracurriculars. I appreciate that you mentioned looking at quality over quantity. You know, someone that does something for just a couple of weeks and then goes on to something else the next year, that's not showing longevity. So you're looking at not necessarily someone who's the president of the club, but someone who's committed to whatever it is that they do, because you're building that college community. So you're looking at the academics to make sure that the student can handle the work on your campus, but you're also looking to see what that student did throughout high school so that you get a better idea of the type of community member that they're going to be. So Kelly, let's unpackage some of the parts of the application just a little bit. Has the University of Georgia made any changes, for example, to its standardized testing policy? And how do you currently weigh SAT or ACT scores in your overall application review?
Thank you for bringing up this question. So first and foremost, the University of Georgia is governed by the University System Board of Regents, who sets the admissions requirements for all public colleges and universities in the state of Georgia. The University System of Georgia does require that UGA require standardized test scores. So whether a student is taking the SAT or the ACT, we don't have a preference, but it is required for a complete application. And just understand that that's not anything that we're giving any flexibility on. So students who want to apply know that is needed. I do want to emphasize that while it is required and a part of our review process, it is by far not the most important part of our review process. When we're thinking about, I'm going to give another analogy here, but when we're thinking about, you know, you as a student, 4 years in high school tells a lot more about as a student than 4 hours at a standardized test score sitting. So think about it a little bit like your high school grades are going to be that marathon, and then the standardized test scores are really going to be a sprint to the finish. You know, they're a piece of that race, but we are looking at really that growth and long-term picture versus how you did at a very brief moment in time.
Well, thank you so much for sharing that. And I couldn't agree more how, you know, your 4 years of high school in terms of everything that you do in those classrooms and beyond, I think it's far more significant than just, you know, that one test, right? So let's dig deeper in the overall application review process. Have you seen any recent trends in students' personal statements and essays that stand out? And Kelly, can you share some tips for crafting a compelling narrative?
Ooh, this is a great question too. When I think about trends, it's not necessarily a topic, but when I think about trends in some students' writing, I often see where students have taken a product writing approach versus a process writing. You know, they are focused on the key things that they want us to know about them. So maybe that is re-emphasizing things that are already listed in their application. You can kind of tell that sometimes those are written pretty quickly. I really want to emphasize and maybe give a tip or suggestion. You know, your essay is going to be a writing process. So that means you are not just going to sit down, write your essay, and be done with it. You're going to start brainstorming. You're going to go through drafts. You're going to get feedback before you come to that final result. So remember, this is not something that's going to come to you overnight. It's certainly going to be a process, and that's a really great way to approach it. Some tips for writing a compelling essay, and when you really think about it, and this, you're going to be like, this sounds easier said than done, but the purpose of an essay is for us to learn new information about who you are as a student. And so if you keep that at the forefront, you already have told us about your activities, your involvement, etc. This is a place for you to share new information that is nowhere else in your application. And so to kind of start with those brainstorming concepts, one of the suggestions I think is really helpful for students is to listen to what others say about you. You know, sometimes it's hard to look at yourself and say, okay, what are great things about me? But if you ask people who know you, like a teacher, maybe a supervisor or a volunteer coordinator, sometimes they can share things that you don't often see yourself. And that can be a really great idea starter into writing a college essay. In talking about idea starters, I do just want to make a plug that, like, we are in a world where artificial intelligence is everywhere. And to be honest, it can be a really, really great tool if it is used in the proper way. So I would even say that you could use AI, ChatGPT, something of that nature to help you start an idea. But remember, you still need to write this essay, but it can be a good tool to help you get new ideas as a baseline.
Well, we really appreciate that. First of all, you talked about the fact that in the essay, you should not relist what's already in your application. So I would imagine the activity sheet, the transcript, to relist what you've been doing or to talk about your grades, which are easily found again on the transcript or activity sheet, would be a missed opportunity. And of course, the essay is a writing process with multiple drafts, and that's what it should be, students. It's not a one and done where you sit down and you're going to get it done in an hour. Your advice was awesome. Listen to what other people say about you, because that could certainly help you generate ideas. And you talked about AI and how, yes, you can use AI to help you generate the topic. But many reps have said it's not so much about the topic, it's what you write about the topic that you choose that gives insight in terms of who you are as a person. Perhaps something happened. What was your reflection process? How did you pivot? What were the questions that you asked yourself? Those are things that AI cannot do for you so easily. They cannot replace a human being. So again, I love the fact that you talk about, yes, use AI to help generate a topic if you wish, but in terms of writing it and making it your true voice, you need to write a student. So I really appreciate that, Kelly. And I know we touched upon extracurricular activities, but how do you evaluate extracurricular activities and leadership roles and applications? And has this aspect become more or less significant in recent years?
Sure. So with the growing number of applications we've seen at Georgia and the increase in the academic profile, I would say things like extracurricular activities and involvement have probably become more important than ever. And because the reality is if you look at our applicant pool, you're splitting hairs in the differences of their grades or their rigor courses or their test scores. And some people, like, it could be exactly the same. So that's where that holistic review comes into play, and you look for other things that they've done outside of the classroom, those involvements and leadership roles. One thing I do want to touch on is that in our process, we recognize that sometimes not everybody can be a leader. And let's be honest, you need great followers to have a great leader. So you don't always have to be the president or the vice president or the treasurer of an organization to be a leader or to help make an organization great. So know that when we're looking at these applications, not only are we looking at your activities, we're looking at the depth and the growth that you have given in those groups, whether it has an official title tied to your role or not. So that's a big thing to keep in mind. We also understand that everybody has different commitments, whether that be in their home life, maybe limitations. So when we think of extracurricular activities, I want to make sure students know that we consider a part-time job, helping transport your sibling to and from school as a form of an activity. It takes time away from what you could be maybe doing in terms of prepping for academic courses or things like that. So we recognize that extracurricular activities come in many shapes and forms, as well as that sometimes an unofficial leadership role too. So those are things that we're certainly looking for because, again, as I mentioned earlier, that's going to translate into who you are going to be and how you're going to commit to campus when you arrive.
Well, I appreciate you talking about part-time jobs and perhaps helping a sibling, which really fall under the umbrella of unofficial leadership roles in many cases. And it also might be, as you touched upon, the reason why you're not taking all the rigorous courses, or perhaps you're not involved in five other clubs at school like so many other students are. And students, if you don't indicate that you have the part-time job or you have to help a sibling, you're leaving it up to the admissions representatives to speculate. So it's very important to look at that overall application as a marketing package, understand the role of each part and how each part builds on the next to give admissions representatives a complete look at who you are as a student academically, but also as a hopefully a future community member at the great thing we call the University of Georgia. Anything else you want to add to that, Kelly?
No, your point about making sure that they tell us things, because otherwise, how are we really going to know? If you think about admissions officers as file readers, we essentially are looking for as many context clues as we can. So the more things that you can give us, the more helpful it is for you in that applicant review process.
Well, that's awesome. Thank you so much. And Kelly, what makes a letter of recommendation from a teacher or a counselor truly impactful? And have there been any notable examples recently that made a difference in an applicant's evaluation that, you know, you could share with us?
Sure. So I think letters of rec can be really insightful into who you are when no one is looking. I think that's a really great way to say it. You know, teachers and counselors are usually the ones who are like supervising during class change and see how you interact with people when really no one is looking. Someone drops their books. Are you the one that leans over and helps them pick these up? You know, so in terms of a letter of rec, this is something that we don't require. And the reason why we don't require it is because we know that first and foremost, teachers have a lot on their plate. And if one recommendation did not get submitted, we don't want that to ever be the factor that is preventing a student from going through our process. So that is why it is an optional piece, because it's never going to hinder the applicant. However, there are times where a teacher or a counselor recommendation can help move the needle and fill in some of those context clues that maybe students aren't really sure how to communicate them or how they hone in on pieces where we may not have the full scope of items. So in terms of rec letters that can be helpful, sometimes a teacher or counselor can tell a little bit more about some of the challenges you are facing, how you have overcome them. I think good examples are when a teacher recommendation letter is submitted from maybe a course subject where your grade is not the strongest, but that teacher talks about how you sought out extra help. You went to tutoring hours after class. You were a great partner on group projects, but your grade is lower, but here is how you move the needle over time. If you think about it like that, any grade where you have just an easy A, they're probably not going to be able to speak too much about who you are as character. But if it is something that you struggled in academically, they can talk a little bit about grit and self-advocacy, which if you're going to college, those are two things that you really need, because you are going to have to ask for help. And the sooner that you are willing and able to do that is just going to make the college experience that much easier.
Well, it's great that you gave that example, and you're right. You know, if there's a class where you're getting an A+, unless you're a student in that class and the teacher writes about the fact that anytime you're providing an answer to your classmates, everyone listens because you're so brilliant, right? Unless there's something different, something special, but the admission reps already know that if you're getting an A+ in English, that you're probably a really good student in that class. But I appreciate you mentioning perhaps a class where you're not necessarily getting that A+, and the teacher could talk about the fact that the kids sought out extra help, never gave up, never complained, and to put it your way, showed a lot of grit and self-advocacy, which again, you're going to need in college. I think that could definitely add to an overall application. So again, we appreciate that insight. So what are the different ways a student could apply to the University of Georgia? And is there a benefit to applying one way over the other in terms of being admitted or being considered for merit aid?
Sure. At the University of Georgia, there are two application types students can choose to apply under. So the first would be our early action round, and the second would be regular decision. I want to go ahead and make sure everyone knows that our process is non-binding. So that means a student can apply comfortably under either plan. They can be offered admission and still choose to tell us no. Now, early action and regular decision at Georgia, the only difference is the matter of timing in which a student chooses to submit their application, or a better way to frame it is when they're ready to have these items reviewed. So a big question is, should I apply early action or regular decision? Neither one is better than the other. It's just, are you ready to have all parts of your application reviewed on October 15th? test scores, grades, recommendation letters? If that answer is yes, early action is a good plan for you. If you are not ready to have all parts of your application reviewed on October 15th, regular decision is going to be a better plan for you with a January 1st deadline that gives you additional time to perfect or improve those components that you may not be ready to send in on October 15th. So in terms of is one better for admissions or not, no, they're exactly the same. And that even goes for merit-based aid. As long as you apply for admissions to Georgia under either plan, you have the same opportunity to be awarded merit-based scholarships in our office.
Well, we appreciate that. First of all, the fact that you have two non-binding options, early action, which the deadline is October 15th, and regular decision, January 1st. So really, the only difference is time. If you need more time, go in the regular decision round. If you're able to get everything in on October 15th so that you could hopefully enjoy your senior year of high school, then fine, submit it early action. But in terms of being admitted or merit-based scholarships, as Kelly said, there's no difference. You'll be considered for both in either round. So we appreciate that. And Kelly, looking ahead, what are some of UGA's strategic goals or visions for the next 5 to 10 years? And how might these influence the university's appeal to prospective students?
Sure. So we've seen growth in our first year enrollment class size over the past couple of years. You know, around 2019, this was around like 5,500 students. And as mentioned, we're closer to about 6,200 now and have been for the past couple of years. So we are building new spaces to support that growth of new students. So we should have a new residence hall, dining hall, and some academic centers built here in the next couple of years to continue to support new students. And then I'd say probably like one of the most exciting things that has is coming to fruition is the approval for a School of Medicine by the Board of Regents this year. And so the Board of Regents has made a $50 million investment into this coming to life. And it was recently announced, and we're just in that accreditation process at this point, and we'll have official announcements when there are changes and when things get going from there. But we are certainly headed in the right direction. And I think that's a big goal, is to have more doctors to serve the residents of Georgia. So for students who are maybe interested in going to a school of medicine one day, that could be a really exciting thing to have on a campus, especially at Georgia.
Absolutely. A school of medicine is always very exciting. And in addition to that, you talked about the different buildings that are coming about, whether it's your residence halls, dining halls, academic centers. So that's terrific. One other question that I wanted to ask related to students is, for those that had an IEP or a 504 plan while in high school, what resources does UGA offer to help ensure that they continue to be supported and successful once they're on your campus?
That's a great question. So here at University of Georgia, we have a Disabilities Resource Center. And so they are essentially professional staff who work directly with students to assess their individual disability-related needs and develop appropriate plans for accommodations and services. So for students who are admitted to Georgia and they want to come, really their first step to do is make sure that they register for services and provide their individual plans so that the DRC really can be kind of like that conduit to you and a professor in class, or getting those things that you need, such as testing accommodations, assistance with note takings. When we talk a little bit about self-advocacy, this is a really, really good example, is that people don't know what they don't know. So if you take that initial step and register, they're going to be there to support you and make sure that you have the best possible experience academically and socially when you're here as as a student. Now, kind of piggybacking off that, in addition to the DRC, we also have, I mentioned, you know, the tutoring and support that we have for students. And I really want to emphasize that this is offered to all students, regardless of if they have an IEP or, you know, learning differences. This is something that we would really want all students to take advantage of if that's something that they think they might be needing.
Well, like I said earlier, you have a 95% retention rate because you do a great job getting that community to be your freshman class. But also, you're very mindful of making sure that students are supported, whether it's academically or socially, so that they continue to return to UGA as they do with that 95% retention rate. And I mention all of this because I always put the Office of Undergraduate Admissions in the show notes. Kelly, but if there are any other resources, perhaps some of the programs that you mentioned that you want to link in the show notes for the students and their parents, please provide them to me. And of course, we'll make them available in the show notes. This has been a phenomenal follow-up conversation, Kelly. Before I get to the last question, I just have to ask, is there a question that I didn't ask you today or a topic that I didn't bring up that you'd like to share with us now?
Sure. I would say one thing that we're seeing, and I'm sure you're seeing this in high school too, is that students are really can burn themselves out. Taking on too much is certainly a thing. And if you take on too much in high school, it might even get worse when you get to college. So something that I want to emphasize for parents as well as students is help your student find balance. Students do not need to take every single rigor course offered at their school. We want to see students who are finding a balance in a sense of that they are doing well in those courses. They're also doing well socially. They have friends, they're involved, they have a life outside of the classroom. So I think that's really something that is kind of, I would say, counterintuitive to what people think about the admissions process, but we do certainly want students to find balance, practice well-being, and take care of themselves throughout the process.
Well, we really appreciate that. And again, this is an awesome conversation. Unfortunately, it does lead us to that last question, which is, what are your top three pieces of advice you'd provide a student and their parents getting ready for the college admissions process?
All right, so I'm going to give two pieces of advice, and I think these are very helpful overall. But, you know, one of the things that I really want students and families to recognize is that in the college admissions process, there are controllable factors, things like the classes that you take, the grades that you make, the activities that you get involved in. Those are controllable, but uncontrollable factors are institutional priorities that vary at each university. So I mentioned earlier that our goal is to maintain an 80% Georgia resident class and 20% out of state. That is a great example of a factor that is beyond your control and something that you should not worry about. So remember, at each college you are applying to, remember to focus on the pieces that are in your control, and those uncontrollable factors, you need not to worry about them. The second thing I want to emphasize, and again, I think this is to students as well as their parents, but parents in this process, encourage your student to go ahead and practice self-advocacy. You know, you see a lot of times that maybe a parent is the one driving the college list, the college visit process, sending all of the questions. I'd certainly think this should be a family conversation, but it is good to go ahead and see that your student is taking some ownership in this before they get to college, because those are things that they're going to have to do anyways. So perhaps ask them to write up a list of colleges that they want to apply to. Ask them to schedule some visits. Ask them to reach out with the questions. Just going ahead with these first few steps and taking ownership is really going to translate, I think, positively for the student wherever they end up going to college.
Well, I think those are tremendous pieces of advice. Number one, make sure that the kids are taking ownership and are very much a part of this process. But perhaps more importantly, I'm so glad that you spoke about the institutional priorities, not only in the ending, but throughout the episode, because again, so many students do everything that they can to create that marketing package, a comprehensive application, only to get waitlisted or even rejected, and they think it's something that they did. But again, if you think about what you said earlier, where your institutional priority is to accept a class of 6,200, but you're getting 43,000 applications, plus you're only looking to accept 20% of students from out of the great state of Georgia, that's something that students need to hear and understand, that to your point, you have the things you control, but you also have to understand that there's a lot that you don't control in the process, and every school has different institutional priorities. Kelly, this was amazing. I can't thank you enough. I'm going to call you again when I get up to about 350 episodes, by the way, and I hope you come back.
Sounds great. Would love to.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Kelly. And to everyone out there, good luck with the college search. Take care, all, and best wishes. Thank you for joining us on this episode of The CAP, the College Admissions Process Podcast. We hope you enjoyed the show. If you did, please don't forget to tell a friend. And follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and wherever you listen to your podcasts. I am your host, John Durante, and I look forward to seeing you on the next episode of The CAP. Thank you for listening to the College Admissions Process Podcast presented by Prep Expert. Prep Expert offers live online SAT and ACT courses with the best score guarantees, instructors, and curriculum. Go to PrepExpert.com to guarantee your child's success.